So we are in this text called Manashodhanam, which means purification of the mind. And so far in the first 8 verses, we have studied the importance of mental purification. We studied what are the impurities of the mind, the negative qualities, and why one has to remove them. It is important for a spiritual seeker, but it is also important for anybody wishing to progress in any field. If your mind is full of negativity, you cannot become a successful businessman, you cannot become a successful professional, you cannot even become a successful mother. So for any success in any endeavor, one has to have a pure, calm, and a peaceful mind. And so that is what we studied in the first 7 verses, the importance of this text, why I need to purify my mind. Those of you who have been listening, or you are welcome to go home and read this again. And then last week, Dr. Shukla spoke about the path of inquiry. The path of inquiry. How one can inquire into the nature of this process, and how can I inquire into the nature of my mind. He talked about the nature of the mind, the nature of the intellect, and how this path of inquiry can lead me to the right knowledge. So he kind of laid the groundwork for what I am going to talk about, and that is the path of knowledge. The path of knowledge. So today we shall address knowledge. And that is verse number 9. And what is knowledge? And how I can acquire this knowledge, and what is the benefit? So I'll try to address that today. So it's verse number 9 in page 20.
नहि ज्ञानेन सदृशं पवित्रं इह विद्यते पवित्रं इह विद्यते बहवो ज्ञान तपसा ज्ञान तपसा भूता मद्भावमागताः मद्भावम आगताः.
So he says nahi gyanena, nahi means this is with certainty. The teacher is absolutely positive when he says he means I am sure. Na means no. Na is in all languages means no. Gyanena, gyanena means more than knowledge. Sadrisham, compared to knowledge, there is no other pavitram, there is no other purifier iha vidyate. In this world, in this entire universe, there is no greater purifier than knowledge. Knowledge is the most important thing in everything, you know, even in how to bring up a child or how to run your business, how to assemble a machine if you have bought an appliance. So anything you need to have knowledge. So they say there is no greater purifier than knowledge in the path of spirituality. Here, of course, we are all on the spiritual path and learning meditation. So it says one has to have the knowledge. Before I sit to meditate, I need to know what am I meditating on? What is my goal? What is my purpose? Why am I on this earth? And he says, bahavo jnana tapasa. Jnana tapasa means, jnana means knowledge. Tapasa means the penance of knowledge. So many people who have performed this penance of knowledge. You know, we think of penance and knowledge as two separate things. Penance means standing on one leg for years, and then knowledge is, you know, sitting and studying. So how can they use the same? But he says that many people who have applied this penance of knowledge, what has happened to them? They have become purified. Puta, their mind has become purified. And that is, as we said, the whole purpose of spirituality is spiritual purification of the mind. And having purified the mind, what happens? Mat bhavam agataha. The Lord says, mat bhavam. They come to me. Agata. They have come to me. And here he's talking about all the saints and the prophets and Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and Guru Gobind Singh and Guru Nanak and Hirabai and Saint Francis. So many such saints and prophets, through the practice of knowledge, through the penance of knowledge, they have purified their mind and have come to me, the Lord is saying. The Lord is, so this verse is spoken by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita, but has been taken by the author because it is very relevant to this subject. There is not too much commentary on this verse. It's only a paragraph, so it gives me chance to use my imagination. And knowledge is such a beautiful subject, we can speak for hours. But fortunately for you, we have only half hour. Otherwise, you would have been here till 9 o'clock. So I'll try to finish in half hour what I was planning to do in 3 hours. So it says there is no greater purifier than knowledge. So now there are two kinds of knowledge. There is worldly knowledge and there is spiritual knowledge. And worldly knowledge is huge. You know, there is so much to know. I was just reading, it's so strange. It says the US tax code, just the tax code alone, is 4 million words. And it's 10 times the size of the Bible. And for what? You know, 10 times the size of the Bible. And I mean, and all it does is it creates problems and obstacles. So worldly knowledge is so immense. But where does it get us? Yes, you know, you need to know the worldly knowledge. You need to know it to file your taxes. You need to know, you know, how to drive. You need to have worldly knowledge to study in school and to earn a living and have a family. But that is not the whole purpose of life. As we all know, the purpose of life is something higher. I'm not here just to have a family, acquire a living, and, you know, just end my life. My goal of life is something higher. My goal of life is to reach higher, to evolve to the status of Jesus and Buddha, and to become a saintly person. Maybe not all of us can become like Saint Francis or can become like Mirabai, but at least we can become better individuals. And that is the main purpose of life. So that is why they say there is a worldly knowledge and spiritual knowledge. And the purpose of spiritual knowledge is, who am I? Who am I? Who is God? And what is my relationship with this entity called God? Some people call him Father in heaven, Allah, Krishna, Buddha, Shiva, Jesus. But who is this entity? Where is he? What does he do? Why did he create this world? Why did he create me? So that is what I need to know. So that is the main purpose of knowledge, is to tell me who I really am and who is this God and what is my relationship. And once I know who I really am, then my relationship with the world also gets better. Because the problem in the world is, in between relationships, is the ego. Is the sense of superiority, the sense of that I am somebody better than the rest, or I am separate from the other, or I am... So the ego is the source of the problems. And so through spiritual studies, slowly that ego is diminished. It does not mean that the ego being diminished means that you become useless and you are a nobody. No, in fact, through the right understanding of the ego, I actually come to the understanding that there is only one entity called God, only one spiritual entity, which is described by different names. And this whole universe is nothing but an expression of that. And so am I. So through spiritual knowledge, I slowly come to remove this individuality that separates me from others and separates me from God. And that is the whole purpose of, because the worldly problems come. Why? The problems between individuals, because of ego. The problems between communities. The problems between two religions. The problems between two nations. The wars that are happening throughout the world, you know, the conflicts. The basic problem is the ego. And whether it's the individual ego or whether it is the community's ego, the national ego. And maybe later on we'll be fighting with other planets, you know, if we ever discover life, and then we'll start bombing them and they'll start bombing us. And so then it will be an earthly ego, you know, now because we are Earth and we want to be superior to whatever this planet X19 or whatever we discover. So the source of the problem, so abolition of ego helps not only in relationships, but helps to uplift my thinking. Then they say knowledge should lead to practice. If knowledge, I study something and then I don't apply that in my life, it's like I cooked a beautiful meal with all 8-9 courses and set it up on the table with the plates, and then I didn't eat it. Then what use is that food to me? It's no use. Or I cooked a beautiful meal, 8-9 courses, and my guests all came and ate it and I didn't eat it. And I was left hungry. Again, that meal was no use to me. So spiritual knowledge, if it does not come into practice, it is like I cooked and I did not eat. So it is no benefit. So whatever I study, whether it's in the Bible or in the Gita or the Quran or in these classes, I have to go home and practice. I have to apply that. Otherwise, it was no benefit to me. So I ate, but I cooked, but I did not eat. But worse than that is I cooked, everybody else ate, and I didn't eat. And that could happen if, like, I am now giving these talks, okay, and I have read this book. So I have studied. So all of you ate, all of you benefited and started meditation, and I remained, didn't do it, and I remained the same, then it didn't benefit me either. So when I'm speaking about it or when I'm listening to it, I have to practice. Otherwise, it is no benefit to anybody. And the scriptures, especially the Upanishads, say you are that or I am that. When the teacher tells the student you are that, then the student understands I am that. Now that signifies God, signifies this consciousness that they call as Brahman or Father in heaven, which is considered the all-pervading reality. And that, when it refers to that, we always think of God as that God, you know, because he's somebody far, far away, way up in the heavens, above the clouds, above the skies. And I am so far away, I am this helpless little creature, and he's sitting somewhere up there judging me. But the Upanishads or the teachers say that you are nothing but an expression of that consciousness. Because when God alone was, when Brahman or this consciousness or this total life was there, and from that life or consciousness called God emerged this whole universe, everything emerged from him, then everything is him. So you and I are nothing but the expressions of that one consciousness, one supreme reality. Yes, I don't experience that right now. They say, I don't feel like I am that spiritual being. Obviously, none of us do. That is why we are here. Even though I talk about it, I really don't have that experience. But then what is the purpose of knowing I am that? Because that is also what we practice in meditation. Because it is the thought that when constantly kept in the mind will ultimately lead you to that state of realization. So when, right now my knowledge is intellectual. I know that I am that. Why? Because it says it in the book and because the teacher has said it and I have heard it, and so I am telling you. So everybody says, okay, I heard it, I am that, I already know it. But then what is the use of studying? Why am I here? What is the point of knowing? Not only that, but they say, then why should we pray? Why should we worship? Why should we do service? Why should we remember God? If everything is God and everything is his manifestation and everybody is divine, then why are the problems in the world? Why are the conflicts? If everybody is a manifestation of God, all of us were created by that one God. It's not that some of us were created by a devil or some of us. No, everybody was created by that one God. But then why don't I experience it? Why do I feel myself to be this limited, helpless creature who is suffering and who is going through life's problems, and I have husband problems and wife problems and children problems and job problems and business problems and financial problems? And why am I not experiencing it? And how am I to experience it? And what is the purpose of spiritual practices? Why do they say get up in the morning and meditate? If I'm already that, why do I need to meditate? If I'm already that, why do I need to go to the church or the temple to pray? Because I'm already that, why do I need to pray to a God, somebody far away? Why do they say you need to go out and do service, serve your mankind and help others? What is the need for all that? The answer is that I intellectually know that I am that consciousness, which has been told, at least I have been listening to it for at least 20 years, and I still don't have that experience. So I'm not to discourage you, but the fact is that it is a slow process. The reason we don't experience it is because we have a lot of negative tendencies called vasanas. The mind is very impure. That's what we said. The mind is impure. The mind has a lot of dirt in it, has a lot of negativities, and that does not allow me to experience that divinity. That is in me. That is in all of us. All of us are children of God. That's what Christ said. You are all children of God. But I don't feel like that. I don't feel that God is in me. I don't feel that God is functioning here, or God is close to me, or He's somebody far away. So the purpose of spiritual practices, whether it's to get up in the morning and meditate, whether to get up in the morning and pray before you leave the house, sit in front of, you know, if you have a prayer room, or if you have an image of God or some picture, just pray to God. Or some people worship the sun god as the source of energy. So the purpose of prayer is to purify the mind, to remove the negativities. Because the more you think about some being, the closer you come. Like for a physics student, he all the time thinks about how Einstein used to function. For a basketball player, he looks at videos of Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan and how they used to shoot, and how can I become a good basketball player. So the more I think about that basketball player, the more I emulate him. The more I think about Einstein, the more I want to be like him. So the more I think about God, the closer I come to him, the closer I come to that energy, to that entity that is called God. So the idea is that constantly fill your mind with divine thoughts. So your mind is constantly bathed in that water of divinity, and so your mind gets soaked with that. Then you cannot escape it. And then that's how you slowly remove anger and greed and jealousy and hatred. Because these are not divine qualities. God doesn't have any of those. He's all love. He's all compassion. He's all kindness. He's all mercy. He's all forgiving. But these negative qualities are against what God stands for. And so the more I think about Him, the more I remove these negative qualities. Talking about negative qualities, this woman comes to the pharmacist and she looks very angry. And she tells the pharmacist, I want to buy arsenic. So the pharmacist says, arsenic? I can't sell you. That's a dangerous poison. I'm not allowed to sell you that. Why do you want it? So the lady takes out from her purse a picture of her husband with the pharmacist's wife. In a compromising position. So it's her husband and the pharmacist's wife. So he looks at the picture and he says, why didn't you tell me you have a prescription? So that is what these negative qualities do to us. You know, we want to kill somebody, we want to hurt somebody. So through this practice of divinity, through the meditation, through prayer, through study, through service, when I'm doing unselfish work and I'm helping others without expectation of reward, then what happens is slowly my mind becomes unselfish, my mind becomes loving, my mind becomes kind. So that is the purpose of spiritual practices. Otherwise, we were talking about the other day, if I know I'm already that, then what is the role of prayer? What is the role of service? What is the role of spiritual practices? The spiritual practices purifies my mind, it removes my negative tendencies, and then slowly this pure mind can experience God's presence within. And once you experience that you are that divine creature, God is in me, and you experience His presence. Right now I talk about it, but once you experience that, And in the silence of meditation, you have brief flashes of that. Those who meditate on a regular basis, you must have had some brief moments when the mind was totally peaceful and totally happy and totally calm and totally... So that which we may experience for flashes or few seconds, these wise people live in that constantly. So that is called evolution. That is called progress. Progress. It's, evolution is not how much my net worth is or how many pounds I can lift. I mean, those things, okay, you need. But the most important thing is how much am I spiritually evolved? How close am I to God? How close am I to my own self? That is the closest thing to me. That is God. He's my own self. He's my own nature. But I feel far away from Him. I feel myself to be a negative creature. I feel myself to be an unhappy or a suffering because I have gone away from that. So these spiritual practices make me experience that, make me quieten my mind, make my mind pure, make my mind clean and peaceful. And in that silent, peaceful mind, especially when you are meditating or when you are sitting in church and it's very peaceful, then in that silent mind, you can then experience His presence. But for that, for knowledge, reading is very, very important. Some people say, I don't like to read, I want to listen. And you can buy CDs or you can get DVDs. But it is, in my opinion, reading is very important because the book, first of all, is there for you all the time. Now, what I am speaking, you know, will be gone. You have heard it and then you might remember a little bit of it as you walk out. By the time you go home, 90% will be gone. The next day you will say, what did he talk about? Something about knowledge, I think he spoke. I am the same way. You know, when you go and listen to, you know, we have so many Swamijis coming to speak. One doesn't remember, but a book, I think, is good because you can sit down and read. You can go at your own pace. You can turn the page and read it again, you know. But along with that, I feel that listening to the teachers, you know, we have teachers who come here every month. So meeting with them, listening to them, then asking them questions, because we all have doubts. And these teachers are like a coach, like a golf pro who teaches me how to play golf, or a mathematics teacher who teaches me how to study mathematics in college. You can always ask them questions. They can remove your doubts. So reading on a regular basis every day, especially before you go to bed, that's what I say that I recommend to whoever I meet, that please do not read, watch the 11 o'clock news. You know, that should be banned from your house, because the 11 o'clock news is full of violence. It's okay, you heard about it in 5 minutes, but why do you want to keep on dwelling upon it? And then they'll take you into that school and then show you that building and interview with his friends. On and on, and then your mind is just filled with that negativity. It's okay, it happened, it's sad, I'm very sorry. Then move on. So what happens is the last thought that you have in your mind before you go to bed, which is the 10 o'clock or the 11 o'clock news, then that keeps playing like a tape recorder in your mind. So we say read good books, read something good before you go to bed. So that way your mind is quiet, your mind is peaceful, and your mind is filled with divine thoughts. Or you can chant the name of God. You know, that's also what I say. Pick up a mantra, any mantra that you have, and make that your last thought. Or if you have some good CDs which have some good chants, you can listen to that. And then people who come and tell me they have trouble sleeping, I always recommend to them that what they should do is they should first lie down flat on their back. And of course, you prepare yourself and you have read something good or heard something good, so your mind is relatively quiet, has less of these negative thoughts. Then you, from head to toe, you relax every part of the body. You relax the head, the neck, the chest, abdomen, legs and toes. And then when the body is completely relaxed, then start observing your breath. What we do in meditation, you start watching your breath. And as the breath comes in and out, you chant the mantra. It can be anything. It can be Om, or it can be, you know, your personal mantra. It has, as long as it has the name. So as the breath goes in and out, you are chanting the mantra. So then, slowly, slowly, your mind becomes very quiet. If you have done all those things, relaxed the body, watched your breath for a few minutes and chanted the mantra, then you will easily fall into sleep and your sleep will be less disturbed, will be more peaceful. So the benefit of reading and the benefit of listening, because again, the book cannot answer questions. So if you meet a wise person, at least I try whenever, you know, wise people come to this center or when I used to go and drive them and pick them up from the airport and all, I would take that opportunity to ask them questions, to remove doubts. Or if nothing else, just being in the presence of these saintly people, I found has helped me a lot on my spiritual journey, whatever little I know is because of my contact with all these great saints. So knowledge, as we mentioned, is worldly and spiritual. The purpose is, who am I? What is God? What is my relationship? It removes my ego. Knowledge has to be accompanied by practice. And ultimately, I come to that conclusion that not only I am that, but you all are that. Everybody is that. There is only one. And we are all one. We are not separate from any other, whether you're a Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian, or whether you're white or black or Mexican, or whether you're young or short or tall or old, you all are that. And the purpose of spiritual practices is to purify the mind, which this whole book talks about, purification of mind and regular study. That is the only way. Regular, sincere study is the only way. Thank you for your attention. We have time if anybody has any comments, any questions. Yeah, thank you. That's a very good point. I didn't mention that. But satsang, or the company of good. Just as, you know, sports people hang out with other sports people. They go to a bar and watch the Monday night football. Or physicists hang out with other physicists and talk about jokes related to physicists. People who are, you know, into parties, you know, people who are into fashion or people who are into sailing will hang out with other sailors. So that's a very good point. When you're on the spiritual path, try to associate with spiritual people like we are here today. We are all here to study. And so the company of the saints is very good. Also the company of the good people, because then you can kind of support each other. And so it's like anything, even the group therapy, you know, like Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the same idea that when we are together, we can all improve. So that is the same thing. Yes. Thank you.
I noticed I like to ride my bicycle on the bike path, and I noticed that there are a lot of birds around because we have a migratory path. Birds are a bit better together.
Riding your bike, I think two things you can do. One is you can see the Lord's beauty in all the birds and the nature and how beautiful that is. Also, the second thing that I try to do when I'm either on the stationary bike or on the treadmill is pay attention to who is driving the bike, who is driving this body. You know, it is I am driving the bike or I am riding the bike, but who is driving this body? And so keep your attention constantly on the driver, not on the car. See, we all the time pay attention to the car. We don't pay attention to the driver. So this body is the car which I use to function in the world. So turn your attention to the driver of this car. And the more you do that, you will find that even that bike riding will become meditative. It will not stay all the time. Again, your mind will wander into my business or my golf or my what I have to do today. And then slowly again bring it back. Okay, who is riding the bike? I am. Who am I? And so as you do that, you will find that your bike will become more enjoyable. Like I used to find walking on the treadmill to be a very boring activity. I had to have something on TV. Otherwise, I couldn't walk. I had to watch something. But since I've started trying to pay attention to the walker, who is the walker, who is walking, then I don't need TV. I find that I can walk 30 minutes. And actually, I enjoy it a lot more than if I were to watch some ESPN or something. I mean, not that I don't do that. Of course, I like to watch TV, and I do that for a while in the evening or whatever. But When I'm on the treadmill, I don't feel the need to do that. I actually enjoy my treadmill a lot more than I used to 5 years ago. So I think doing that is very good. But any physical exercise can become. Also in your physical exercise, you're creating endorphins. And so that will become a very positive experience.
When you meditate, does it have to be just quiet, or can you meditate while listening to relaxation tape?
No, some people do that. Some people like to have a relaxation tape. In fact, the first few years when I had started meditation, I used to meditate to the mantra, the Gayatri mantra with the sun god. I had that 108 times, Om Bhurvah Svaha, and it went on for 108 times. That was about half an hour or so. So I would listen to that and make my mind single-pointed and focus on that. So some people need that, but what happens after a while, then you realize that you are becoming dependent on that. It's okay. It's okay. And if that works for you, there's nothing wrong. There's no harm in continuing to meditate on the sound, because if it can make you, help you to make. But what I found that I was becoming dependent, because that tape, in those days we didn't have CDs or all those iPods and all that. So I used to have this cassette tape. So I was carrying it everywhere, you know. And then I had to have my tape recorder. Why? Because I have to get up and meditate for half an hour. And then it became an, you know, dependence that, oh, if I don't have. So I said, forget it. Let me drop it. So that's what happens. You ultimately realize that then that itself becomes an hindrance to your meditation. Mm-hmm. But it helps in the beginning, though. I think it helped me a lot to get my mind focused and single-pointed. But it's like, you know, a child needs a walker to walk. Then once the child can walk, then he says, okay, I don't need the walker. I can walk on my own. And then she can just run all over the place. So that is, to me, that is what. But if that works for you and you want to continue, there's no harm in that. There's absolutely no harm. As long as you don't feel dependent on it. Yeah. Yes. Oh, penance of knowledge. Okay, that's a very good question. I didn't address that. Penance of knowledge means knowledge when it is applied in the world. That is what they mean by application of knowledge. What I talked about eating the food. So application and knowledge is applied with full penance means what is penance? Do an activity with full focus, completely focused, concentrating on one act, one alone. You know, what do you mean by penance? Penance means you sit down and you have one focus. Okay, I'm going to meditate upon that. So penance is single-pointed, focused activity. So when that knowledge is applied, focused, and single-pointed, that is called the penance of knowledge. And when you become one with that knowledge, just as food, as long as it is cooked, is not one with you. You are just the cook. But when you eat that food, then it becomes part of you, and then it nourishes your body. So when that knowledge is applied with complete conviction and focus in the world, and it becomes part of you, then at one time is I knew something, and then I understand it and apply it. It's like medicine. I read all the books of medicine, or dentistry, or law. I have studied, I have passed the bar exam, I passed the boards, but until I go out and see a patient, or until I go out and plead a case before a judge, I don't become a complete doctor or a dentist or a lawyer or an engineer. So one is theory and one is practice. So what they mean by penance is the complete focused practice of that knowledge, where the knowledge becomes you. See, you only become a complete lawyer once you have successfully pleaded a case in a court. You become a good dentist or a doctor when you have cured a patient. You become a successful engineer when you have built a bridge or a built a dam. So when the knowledge and practice become one, that is called the penance of knowledge. Thank you. That's a good question. True, yes. To be successful, you have to give up. Even for a student, we tell them, okay, your finals are here. You can't watch, you know, movies, or you can't play video games. So you have to give up that to be successful in the finals, yes. So that's a very good point. Thank you. It involves some amount of sacrifice. Mm-hmm.